This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 133C, page 517. We've been talking about a number of correlations having to do with the Ajna Center. Every center is like a world. It has all the different rays involved in it and probably can be influenced by all the different planets, but there's a prioritization. So whereas we saw that on page 151 of Esoteric Healing, the throat center and two head centers were ruled by Uranus and Mercury, the Ajna Center, Saturn ruling the throat, and this is for discipleship. What type of disciple? The rulership changes after the third initiation or before the first, and yet we have this interesting situation here where we're given rulerships for disciples, initiates, disciples and initiates. And the head center is ruled by a lesser planet than Uranus. And so we wonder, since Uranus is a greater planet, in a way the greatest of the synthesizing planets, at least the one with the most first ray, we may wonder why the rulership of the head center by Uranus should not be a higher condition than rulership by Vulcan. Excuse me. For the moment, we can consider perhaps either one in the case of the disciple. And I tend to think that when electric fire becomes a real prominent aspect of the energies influencing the human being, that Uranus would be involved because it's the home of electric fire, and that happens after the third initiation. Uranus can be associated with Aries, third initiation, Leo, in a sense, third initiation. So we'll just have to leave that be. I mentioned that there may come a time when the three synthesizing planets rule the centers we're talking about, the head, the Ajna, and the throat, or the head, the Ajna, and the Alta Major Center, respectively Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. So, again, I say it's risky to simply assign one planet or one ray to one chakra. There is a fluid and mutable situation here, and yet logical. It's not chaotic. The throat center is ruled by the third ray in the disciple. It says and or initiate. But the seventh ray comes in at the time of initiation, and this is mediated by Uranus, I suppose. So we'll look here for any reference we have. Seventh ray, throat. And what do we have here? The throat center of the average integrated personality, a telepathy and etheric vehicle here, is is strongly energized by the third ray energy. It's governed by the third ray and strongly energized. Again, seven in number. Third ray energy, seven in number. How interestingly this is put, because it tells us about the sub-rays. That should be really noted, that every ray has seven sub-rays. Whilst the throat center of the spiritual aspirant and of disciples and initiates below the third initiation is responding primarily to the seventh ray influence. And this is peculiarly the case now as the seventh ray is in incarnation. Well, there's something we want to see there. So this is below the third initiation, and we wonder whether Uranus is not involved. And yet this seems a contradiction, doesn't it, when we're talking about disciples and initiates having the throat center ruled by the third ray and Saturn. It is almost as if there is a progression from Earth to Saturn, to Uranus. And yet, he does specify the seventh ray rulership of the throat center below the third initiation. governed by the third ray, and the spiritual aspirant of disciples and initiates below the third initiation by the seventh ray. Does it come back to the third ray again in a higher sense after the third initiation? Because the throat center certainly still does exist. Okay. Right. So that is the reference I was looking for. That's the one. Going on then, the heart center, naturally enough, ruled by the second ray, but remember the relation of the first ray to the heart center. Because the the principle of life pours through the heart center. So that is closely connected with the first ray. Well, Jupiter must be a planet superior to the non-sacred planet which the Sun veils, or for which it is substituted. It's certainly not superior to the Sun, because the Sun is a star, and the Sun almost, Jupiter almost became a star, we are told, by its size. You wonder if in the next solar system it will be a star, or whether it will incarnate as a planet again. It seems to be the planet which, at least according to size, is closest to being a star. Some people refer to it as a failed star, but intimately connected with our Sun and both with a powerful second ray soul. So of the planets in our solar system, it is probably Jupiter most related to our Sun, and Venus most related to Sirius in our in the systems of our local cosmic logos. So as I say, there may be a progression here in terms of rulerships. The non-sacred planet veiled by the Sun, then Jupiter, then the Sun itself. Because rulership of the heart center by the Sun is a different thing to rulership of the heart center by the planet, non-sacred planet, which is veiled by the Sun. When we have here the solar plexus center, yes, the sixth ray planet Neptune is here, and that is superior by far to Mars. Mars has probably a sixth ray personality, and Neptune a sixth ray soul. The monadic ray of Neptune is the second ray. He gives that to us right on 420 of Esoteric Psychology 1. And the monadic ray of Mars is probably not a soft line ray at all, probably some 5-1 combination of 5 going toward 1, or perhaps 5 going towards 3, but there's something about that school for destroyers on Mars which makes me think the first ray is very important ultimately in relation to the red-orange planet, both of those colors being related together to the first ray. So Neptune is the planet of aspiration. It's connected with the upper part of the upper point within the solar plexus, and it is involved in the transference of energy from the solar plexus to the heart. Sometimes I wonder here as well, whether Neptune should not at some high point of evolution be associated with the heart center. Certainly there is that Pisces connection. Pisces transmits the second ray. It's the major decanate ruler of the three decanates which are found within our zodiac, and it's the It's Pisces that is that major constellational decanate ruler, so intimately associated with Neptune. So I think, you know, when it comes to the heart of compassion, Neptune has a lot to do with the heart center. The expansive heart, perhaps Jupiter, and the, you know, simply the vital heart, it's that second-ray planet veiled by the sun. Probably a non-sacred, I suspect a non-sacred, because the sun is listed, strangely, as a non-sacred planet. Then Uranus again for the sacral center, and this time it makes perfect sense because of the reversal or transference needed at the time of the first initiation, when the sacral and the throat center are engaged in this updrawing and elevation of sacral energies. So, as I said, it always seems to me that Libra is one of those signs that should be associated with the sacral center, because it does give what's called, in the early days, unbalanced fiery passion. And Venus, in that respect, would be connected with the kind of attraction that is felt between the individuals, if you can call them that, involved in those early days, the human beings. But when Uranus steps in as the esoteric ruler of Libra, we get all kinds of deviations, of course, such as are pronounced in the world today, when man, considering himself to be measure of all things, thinks he can engineer his own law, which is against intelligent design. Well, you know, I'm not a Catholic, except in the very, very widest sense, meaning one who tries to be all-inclusive. But to any esotericist or esotericist in training, the idea of intelligent design, of a great intelligence who created or better emanated creation, makes perfect sense. And the function is revealed. So we cannot take a form and imagine that its function is other than what is indicated. This would be to go against the design of creation, the design of our planetary logos in this particular case. So in this case, the esoteric worldview comes very close to the more limited, somewhat correct, I think, worldview of the Catholic religion. Of course, in these modern Uranian, Aquarian, Libran days, there will be all kinds of protest against what I'm saying here, but I think it will be demonstrated in the last analysis that the form reveals the function, and we should not use the form in a way that is outside the ring pass knot of the function. There is freedom, and people exert their freedom, obviously, and can decide how they will use the form. But if one feels oneself to be an aspect of a greater deity, and to uphold a certain function within that deity, and really is simply an expression of the life of that deity, in this case, again, the planetary logos, one will be cautious about conformity to the law which the structure of form reveals. I'm always into trouble on this, you know, with the so-called more liberal young people, including my children, you know, who think I'm just an old antique. But this is how I view it, and although we are living through a time that Uranus will bring all kinds of deviations in relation to the sacral center, perhaps the issue will be solved. And eventually a true hermaphroditism will be the lot of the human being, but not necessarily in the physical sense. because the separation of the sexes will, well, it will probably be countervened, or a new type of evolution will occur to balance the condition of the human being before there was a division of the sexes. So, just like any planet, planet is both male and female, it's self-contained. And yet, interestingly, there are polar relationships between planets and between stars, but we'll leave that issue of sex between solar logoi and planetary logoi to another time, except realizing that there are polar opposites and there is an exchange of energies, but probably as a result of it, we do not have necessarily a reproduction. I'm not saying that we can't, but there is such a thing as the normal bipolar generation. It takes two to make a one. And there's also what we call self-generation or emanation, so that two great entities can somehow enhance each other. And maybe they can fuse as well. I can see that happening. But in terms of the generation of other solar logoi or other planetary logoi, I don't think it's accomplished in that manner, unless you take two entities which have become one and you call it something new. During the process of reabsorption, of synthesis, at the end of the term of expression or incarnation of any entity, greater entity, lesser entities within it begin to merge. And as they merge, maybe Mars merges into the Earth. Maybe Pluto merges into Mars. Maybe Earth merges into Venus. We know Venus eventually will merge into Neptune, but maybe it first merges somehow into Saturn. The subtle principles thereof, not the physical bodies of the planets. And subjectively, it may look like there's only one entity remaining where there were two. Well, is that reproduction or is that synthesis? I think when it comes to the great universe and the one logos, all entities are really emanations. And even if it doesn't seem that they are emanations on the outer level, they are on the inner level emanations. Well, we come to the base of the spine center. There are three rulerships which are shared. let's say three planetary rulerships which are shared. And that is Venus Ajna, Uranus Sacral, and Pluto, base of spine center. And the others are different, and in the difference and in the analysis of the difference, there are important things revealed. Well, but you might even ask, when it comes to the Ajna center, ruled by Venus or Mercury, what is the difference? And I will say this, that the Ajna center ruled by Venus has a more direct connection with the higher mental plane and with the egoic lotus and the causal body. And the Ajna center, to my way of thinking, at least ruled by a higher Mercury, has a greater connection with the spiritual triad and with the cosmic ethers. We still have to sort out that question about whether the Uranus-Mercury rulership of the head and the Ajna pertain only to disciples below the third initiation, or whether somehow there is something going on beyond the third initiation for those. Mercury is a higher planet than Venus. It's older, it's more occult, it receives what's called seven times the light which Earth receives, whereas Venus receives only three times the solar light. So it is an older and more occult planet, and definitely connected with the cosmic ethers. Mercury is always an etherically related planet, whether it's our systemic ethers in our etheric body or our higher principles in their vehicles, the cosmic ethers. And so is Uranus with Mercury found there. So Venus, generally not so much, although it does have its Buddhic qualities. So the function of what the Ajna could, we're told at one point that the Ajna connects with the spiritual triad. I believe we are told that. You know, going on a little hunt here. I've got it all. Ajna, spiritual triad. Okay. By the soul of spiritual triad. Okay, let's see if we can find anything definite. Okay. I know this is here. I know this is here. The Ajna, here we go. This is it. The Ajna Center relates the spiritual triad to the personality. There we go. Whereas the higher center, the head center, relates probably the monad to the personality. The head center, more the monad and the atmic plane and the Ajna Center in general, the spiritual triad, but the personality. So the monad is higher than the personality. So it relates the expression of the monad in the formless worlds to the personality, whereas the head center may, in indirect manner, relate the monad to the personality. This is one I was looking for. So we ponder on this statement. And head center, Atma, right eye buddhi, left eye active intelligence. All right. 148 of what book? I guess it's, should be, what should it be? Esoteric psychology something? Esoteric healing. All right. Good. So I'll copy this here, and this is Esoteric Healing 148. So, which would be a more likely ruler to you? Venus connecting the spiritual triad to the personality? I think Venus connects the soul to the personality. Or Mercury connecting the spiritual triad. And if it's Mercury connecting the spiritual triad to the personality, it happens at a later initiation than that in which Venus connects the soul to the personality. So I'm assuming that one has to read DK's words there on Esoteric Healing 151 very carefully and with the intuition open. So for the moment, I am thinking that the Mercury rulership of the Ajna Center is a higher rulership than the Venus rulership of the Ajna Center. And I suppose everything, you know, everything changes after the third degree, but is he telling us that it changes to Uranus-Mercury after the third degree? It can't be changing to Venus-Vulcan after the third degree, because that definitely applies to disciples. So Venus-Vulcan, to me, is less high than Mercury-Uranus. There is a close connection between Venus and Vulcan. They may both have ultimate secondary monads connected with the sun. I have reason for saying that, but the outer expression, of course, is very different. So I'll make this into one of those less less bold statements, and green at that. So now we've gone through basically, and I've talked about some associations here, between the rulers of the chakras at various stages. We could say, what are the stages given here or implied elsewhere in which the chakras have various planetary rulers? And we have, well, in terms of what he said, undeveloped man, where we have five non-sacred planets and two sacred planets ruling the head center and heart center. Heart center and head center. Then we have average man. Five non-sacred planets, non-sacred planets, and two sacred planets ruling the Ajna center and the sacral center. Then we have the disciple slash initiate with seven sacred planets, three of which are the same as the let's see, how did that work? It's these three, not sacred, but because there is a, it's not seven sacred planets, it's six sacred planets and Pluto. So three planets, which are Venus, Uranus, and Pluto, are the same as in the case of the average man. Then, another set of rulers featuring Uranus, head center, and Mercury, Ajna center. So the question is, so is this higher or lower than the preceding set of rulerships? And then one that I'm merely inferring, a set in which the three synthesizing planets rule the three major head centers. And those would be Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, ruling the major head center, the Ajna, and the Alta major, Alta major center. So those would be three sets. Now, we could even go higher and leave the Alta major out of it altogether and wonder whether the head center, the 12-petaled lotus in the head and the jewel might be ruled by three separate planets, with the head center, Uranus being the entire head center, Neptune being the 12-petaled lotus within the head, and Vulcan representing the jewel. We still have to have a place for Saturn, of course. And its connection with the Alta major center makes a lot of sense. And you wonder about Jupiter, the planet of vision at the Ajna center, giving a broad, expansive vision. Anyway, the rays or the emissions, the influences of these various planets can stimulate different centers in different ways. And the whole idea about the functional mutability, remember the possible functional mutability of the planets ruling the chakras within the solar logos and also within our own system. It's a complicated issue with everything shifting, changing according to law. And what we have to do is get that snapshot of what's happening in the life of the human being at any one moment. Where it came from, where it may go, these are interesting things, but what's happening right now, what's really happening over a period of years, where there will be a need to assist the person in handling the various energies. Do you know, for instance, is your heart ruled by the sun or that non-sacred planet or Jupiter? How do you feel it? Is your Ajna center ruled by Venus or perhaps by Mercury? How do you feel it? What about your head center in general? Do you find that it's Pluto? Do you find that it's Vulcan? Or do you find, in a sense, that Uranus rules the head center? And what about the sacral center? Is it Uranian really for you, or is it Martian in some way, or both? Or will even Earth play its role there? Sometimes when I see people who have maybe 20 children, I wonder if Earth is not playing its role in the sacral center. All of this is controlled by law, and the combinations of these energies are lawful and discernible to those who can discern. And we obviously want to number ourselves among such people through careful study and observation and intuitive realization. To these rays must be added, in both groups of human beings, the fourth ray, which governs humanity itself as the center, as a center in the body of the planetary logos. What center is that? Well, we've been told as in the center. That's one of the things we've been told, sometimes throat center, but humanity is the Ajna center in the what says body or expression of the planetary logos, and thus relates the fourth ray. And the fourth ray and Mercury to the Ajna center. So Mercury does bring in primarily the fourth ray, and you know, you have the two petals of the Ajna center, and 96 and plus 2, maybe 98 petals altogether. So we have a mercurial situation where it could be this way, it could be that way, and we're attempting to decide. That's why Libra, as a constellation, has such a strong connection with the Ajna center. As I say, probably, you know, the entire zodiac is contained in each center, in a way. But Libra, the sacral center, Libra, the Ajna center, and can Libra, in its second-ray aspect, be considered related to the heart center? The heart provides the balance, we've been told, in Agni Yoga. And the whole idea of right human relations is a very second-ray Libra type of configuration and relates to the heart which recognizes everyone else as the soul. So to these rays must be added the fourth. And the fourth is not listed, but sometimes the fourth is related to the base of spine in some of the tabulations. Well, Mercury is found there because it rules Kundalini active, whereas Mars rules Kundalini latent. So the complexity of the assignments of rays and planets in a state of rational mutability is maybe more than most of us want to reckon with. So this thus bringing all the ray influences into a sevenfold stream of energy, playing upon the lower self in the three worlds, or upon those who are entering or into or a part of the fifth kingdom in nature, and that would be tabulation number 2, in which more sacred planets are found, Jupiter for the heart and Vulcan for the head and Saturn for the throat and Neptune for the solar plexus. Intensifying the problem for humanity as a whole is the problem of the individual within that whole. To the influences to which he is subjected as an individual through his past and his own peculiar horoscope, so this is the, you know, the karmic carryover, and his own peculiar horoscope, and to those in which he, and to those in which he shares as a part of the fourth kingdom in nature. Let me read that again. To the influences to which he is subjected as an individual through his past and his own peculiar horoscope, and to those in which he shares as a part of the fourth kingdom in nature, must be added the effect of his two major rays, personal and egoic. Apparently, these will affect the chakras. Earlier, we were told that two sacred planets rule the undeveloped man, or rather, rule two chakras in the undeveloped man. And according to Soul and Personality Ray. So these indicate his type of mechanism and his soul quality. The type of mechanism here is obviously the personality ray. And his soul quality ruled by, of course, Soul Ray. It must not be forgotten either that his seven centers are in close relation to the planetary centers. Well, we've talked about those to a degree. We've talked about five present inlets of planetary force and their various rays. And we've talked about, you know, the human kingdom, animal kingdom, vegetable kingdom, mineral kingdom, and so forth. Kingdom of souls, kingdom of planetary lives. Those are planetary centers too. There are different kinds of planetary centers, are there not? Even chain lords are planetary centers, and globe lords are more minute planetary centers. Different kinds of planetary centers. And that he is conditioned not only by the centers in his own nature and their rays, but also by the centers found within the human kingdom, which consist of different types of human beings, whether the mass, the intelligentsia, the spiritually inclined. Those are all different kinds of centers. The new group of world servers, and also by the planetary centers. So many different types of centers condition the individual human being. What an intricate exchange of energies we have here. And of course, DK tells us that there will come the time when all of this will be intuitively evident and all relations will fall into their proper place, in proper priority, and there will be clarity, and we will no longer be confused, unable to see the wood, because we are seeing too many trees. So now he's going to go on to a new extended discussion of all of these relationships, the races, the rays, and the signs. The races, maybe the root races here, ruled by different rays. So many of these tabulations are found in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. It'd be worth going over them, of course. And probably at the end of this book, because once we end the book, in the early 600s of the book, we get into many tabulations taken from the Secret Doctrine and from the Treatise on Cosmic Fire, which are interesting and important collections of information. The theme we will now consider is one which is of general interest, but not of individual moment. Probably not affecting the progress of the individual to any great extent. Arguing as one ever must, from the universal to the particular, especially in occultism, it is essential that humanity relate its own mechanism to the greater mechanism through which the planetary life functions and view his soul as an infinitesimal part of the world's soul. So, holism, we learn to think in wholes, and the philosophy of holism conditions our thoughts so we do not become fragmented in our consciousness. It is necessary for the human being, for him, therefore, to relate his sun sign to his rising sign. This is a very practical thing. And his soul to his personality. Because the sun sign is, in a way, the representative of the soul within the incarnation, and the other way around. The rising sign is the representative of the soul in this incarnation, and the sun, the representative of the personality. Combine those two qualities into a fourfold picture, you get a very important abbreviation of who the entire person may be. The soul ray and rising sign, and the personality ray and sun sign. So viewing both as aspects and integral parts of the human family. So it's not just the Leo part that we're interested in, but the Aquarian part. Who are we within the human, within the wholeness of humanity? What type of center do we find ourselves within the being called humanity? And what, therefore, is our function? This will be increasingly the case. This science of relations. So we don't remain isolated, thinking only of ourselves, with, in a way, the world revolving around us, a very geocentric, personocentric point of view, but a decentralized point of view. So this will be increasingly the case. This process is beginning to demonstrate in the steadily expanding group national and racial consciousness which humanity is today demonstrating. It's all under the Aquarian influence, we might say. You know, it's like Jupiter and Aquarius. The esoteric ruler, giving a greater sense of the whole in which one participates. The group national and racial consciousness which humanity is today demonstrating, a consciousness which shows a spirit as a spiritual inclusiveness, or as an abnormal and wicked attempt from the standpoint of the soul to fuse and blend all nations into a world order based on material issues and dominated by a material vision. You know, like Aquarius does rule, or did rule, the Nazi Party. And they came into power in, I think it was January 30th of 1933. It was under Aquarius. And there is this standardization which they sought, with all individuals being non-entities and the state being everything, and all in a fascistic manner subservient to the state. So there could be a spiritual inclusiveness which allows for variety, or the abnormal wickedness induced by the Black Lodge, abnormal wicked attempt, and, you know, induced by the Black Lodge. There's the word lack in that word black. Something's missing. Brothers of unique blindness, we are told, who have journeyed far into the land of distances, we are told. So this Aquarian tendency towards fusion could be regimentation, and then the stifling of the individual aspect of the great will. So a fusion which becomes regimentation. Thinking about Aries here and the importance of the soul ray of Germany, ruled by Aries, and I'm thinking about Bismarck, who was an Aries and the sun sign, and he especially anchored materialism on our planet as kind of an avatar of the Black Lodge. At least that's the way the Tibetan sees it, though other people see him in a different way. Interesting, you know, such a negative view of Bismarck, and also not the most glowing view of Gandhi, seeing other factors that were involved in the non-violence or not taking sides in the Second World War. I had a friend from India who told me that the Nazis were making great headway in India, and there were many, many sympathizers there. Sure, because of the word Aryan, you know, India is in a way populated by the so-called Aryan race, the Aryan root race, or the first root race of the Aryan fifth race. And there's a connection there with the Germans, who were calling themselves Aryans, the 1-5 connection, the first and the fifth. There was nothing spiritual in the vision of the leaders of the powers which were called the Axis powers. Nothing spiritual. In fact, he's saying very material. So much was judged by the hereditary lines, the consciousness was not viewed. It's as if the consciousness of the despised races emanated from their distinctive physical forms, which of course is putting everything upside down and backwards. But the spiritual intent of mankind is slowly growing, and the great law of contrasts will eventually bring illumination. A great law of contrast. There's so many laws about which we know really nothing. Could this be a Geminian or Mercurian? Mercurian law. I have witnessed this. I've seen it in my own case. When you really want to understand, take the things which oppose each other in meaning, take the opposites, and they will each shed light upon each other. Try to understand everything by its opposite. That is, if it has an opposite. Maybe the absoluteness has no opposite. But in a way, the logos, anything whatsoever, any specifiable, I call it, any finiteness, any finite thing, is in a way the opposite of the absolute, though included entirely within the absolute and can be none other than the absolute itself. But these are things way beyond our human mind, and it's difficult to try to base a life philosophy upon things which we cannot entirely fathom. But sometimes better than basing a life philosophy on things which we can all too well fathom and which are very limited. So there is such a thing as the law of contrasts. And DK is telling us that what goes on in the world today, the dividing line between good and evil is much more noticeable than ever before. And so these contrasting states, see, the further apart you take things, the more they can be defined in relation to their opposition to each other. So when things are very close, how do you tell apart? But the further you move, the more distinct the two appear from each other, and the light which reveals distinction and difference flashes forth. And sometimes when things are too close, no light flashes forth at all because you just cannot really discriminate them. So polarization brings illumination. That's what he's basically saying. And he said that earlier, too, in a different way. Polarization, let's put it like this, has the potential to bring illumination. When he was talking about the Geminian type of mind, then he was talking about how the interplay of the pairs of opposites develops the mind. So it's an exercise, you know, whatever you see, whatever state you can imagine, see if you can find its polar opposite. And in the search for the polar opposite, light may break forth. We're on page 519. I make these references to the present world situation. See, when was this? This book was probably written over time, I suspect. Some of it, I think, written before the war began, and some of it afterwards. I make these references to the present world situation because unless what I have to say is practical in value during this century of destiny, I might as well work at other modes and methods of raising human consciousness. Well, a moment of reflection there for Master DK. Does this book really help? And I suppose so much has to do with what we do with it and how we help people understand their place in the whole of things. It is a great privilege to know one's place, one's role. And a condition of blindness usually veils the consciousness. And people, you know, they may know who they are in a family, or in a small group, or in their church, or in some other aggregation, but who are they in the larger scheme of things? Where do they really fit? What are they doing in terms of the movement of the whole? This is a privilege, eventually, to realize what these things are. But there are those who see the issues clearly and will make due application of the imparted truths, and for them I write. And let's make sure, you know, oops, that's no good. Let's just say, can we assimilate as much as possible before the year 2025? Can we do that? Because in that year, or closely following that year, will come the new and true and third installment of the teaching, which only the master can write. And no students, no matter how proficient in astrology or resourceful, can really write. We can put together what he has written. We can make it infer things which are not written. And we can maybe stimulate the intuition to reveal those things which are inferred, the truth of those things which are inferred. But in terms of the presentation of the master, it's going to be uniquely his, and there can be no pretending that others can do it. They just can't. So there are those sober moments when you realize what your limitations are, what you can do. We can learn, we can assimilate, we can bring new light on the subject based on what we have learned. New combinations can be made, and with new combinations, new light can flash forth. Hints can be followed. Partial revelations can be seen, and ever greater revelations. But the structure of the next presentation, which he will give, will be full of integrity and will be his own vision, not just a few of the hints which we have followed and perhaps can tell something about. It will have integrity, solidity, and a vastly greater horizon than we can arrive at this time. Still, we continue to assimilate and put things together in a new way so that new light may dawn. Our theme concerns the planetary centers, the rays, and the signs which govern and control them. There's so many varieties of planetary centers, maybe the highest of all, you know, the planetary chains are centers. Then the planetary globes within the chains are centers. Then upon each globe, we have a further sevenfold division representing maybe the kingdoms, the solar systemic kingdoms as they manifest on any particular planetary globe. And then on these globes we have various inlets of force, such as the cities we were discussing, and the continents, which are like externalizations of planetary chakras. Many types of planetary centers, and, you know, it'd be well to prioritize them. A city as a planetary center is certainly not the same thing as a planetary chain, as a center within a planetary scheme, just out of proportion. So we'll deal with the planetary centers that we can actually deal with and leave the rest to speculation. Planetary centers, the rays and the signs which govern and control them. And of course, the world situation has changed very much. There's the emergence of new nations and certain religions which represent centers of force of a certain kind within different planetary centers, within different nations and cities and so forth. So our Earth, being a non-sacred planet, at least for the moment, is in process of becoming a sacred planet. This means an interim of upheaval, chaos, and difficulty. And I pointed out, you know, let's see, I pointed out how long that may really take, from millions of years to even billions or trillions, depending on whether we're dealing with the sacredness of a globe, the sacredness of a planetary chain, or the sacredness of the entire planetary logos of the planetary scheme. I'm sure these will be secrets of initiation, but some sort of impending sacredness is on the way, though probably not the sacredness of the entirety, which would require a fifth cosmic initiation, when we haven't even taken a second. So this could last a long time. If what DK says is true, then we're only halfway through our planetary evolution in the solar system, and the same for our solar logos. And solar systems do have a way of lasting a very long time, according to the Hindu chronology, 311 trillion 40 billion years. The scientists will say that's a ridiculous figure, you know, so long as to be inaccurate. But there are all kinds of interior states which have to be considered, which are not part of their consideration. So the figures are not ours yet. We're given external hints here. We follow them out. The estimations of Sri Yukteswar, Yogananda's teacher, for instance, deals with the yugas more in terms of the great Platonic years of 25,000 something years, much shorter period of time than the ancient Hindu chronology, which I think he says is inaccurate or blind or misleading. Time will tell, but HBB seems to think that those very, very long periods of time are not fanciful at all. So how do you deal with a solar system that, according to the ancient Hindu teaching, may last 300 trillion years, when the modern scientific assessment of the duration of a universe is some 15 billion years? Obviously, we have a problem. We're a big problem. We have a factor of 20,000, some 20,000 times longer. If you divide 15 billion into 311 trillion, you get something like 20,000. And so we have the scientists saying that the whole universe is 20,000 times shorter in duration than the occultists say is the duration of one solar system. The tail is wagging the dog here, and all we can do at the moment is uphold these dissonant perspectives and wait for the day of resolution. Well, I think we are at the point where we can say, okay, look, this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 133C, page. We're not making a whole lot of progress in pages here, because the material is so interesting. Is it so? 519. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, BGN, 133D, page 519.